This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. This week, two new intelligence reports found that Iran and North Korea have made significant advances in nuclear weapons technology. The International Atomic Energy Agency has found that Iran's program has been in place for at least 18 years and involves sophisticated technology specifically intended to produce fuel for nuclear weapons. And the CIA reports that North Korea is currently speeding up its weapons production. While the Bush administration in recent weeks has announced progress in its efforts to disarm both countries, the new information raises serious concerns about the nuclear capability of these two nations and the effectiveness of current non-proliferation measures. We've invited Gary Milholland to help us sort out the recent news on the spread of nuclear weapons. Milholland is the director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. It's a nonprofit foundation which has been researching nuclear and missile technology for nearly 20 years. We started with Iran. In addition to their secret nuclear weapons program, Iran operates nuclear power plants to generate electricity for civilian use. But these power plants can also be used to secretly make fuel for nuclear weapons. I asked Milholland to describe a regulatory plan that would manage the non-military use of nuclear technology.
When you look at Iran's program, what you see is a big reactor that is devoted to making nuclear power, and which will produce plutonium in its spent fuel, but that spent fuel is under contract to be taken back to Russia. So if that contract is performed, the Iranians won't get any closer to the bomb as a result of running that reactor. But then, in addition to the reactor, the Iranians have all these other facilities, uranium enrichment, plutonium production, that really have no connection to making electricity and are just useful for bomb making. And so I think that what the world should push for is to get rid of all these other facilities, these other dangerous facilities that don't have any civilian application, and get Iran to take them down, dismantle them, get rid of them, and then let the world verify that they've done so. It seems to me that's a kind of a compromise that could give Iran electricity if it really wants electricity from uranium, and at the same time remove its bomb-making potential. And I think that's what the world ought to demand now from Iran, since Iran has been caught, in effect, cheating.
Now, I think many analysts would say that the backdrop to this whole situation in Iran is Israel's nuclear weapons program. That's what many of these nations are why they are beefing up their arsenal. And this is a program that Israel will neither confirm nor deny. Do you agree, first of all, with that assessment?
Well, the Israelis do have a very successful, robust, longstanding nuclear weapon program. And I guess I and many other people would estimate that their warhead inventory now is probably reaching 200, which is enough to destroy any conceivable target in the Middle East many times over. The Israelis have also built a large, powerful rocket that can deliver these warheads. And also it has F-16s and F-15s given to it by the United States. So it's true that the Israelis really do have a very potent nuclear potential. Whether that is the real spur to nuclear weapon efforts by the Muslim world is a question. I think that if it were a spur to nuclear weapon activities by, say, Egypt or Saudi Arabia or Iran, that those countries would have moved much faster, much sooner, because the Israeli program goes back to the 1960s. So even though rhetorically you can say that, well, since Israel has the bomb, the Arab countries ought to get the bomb too, you can make that argument. In fact, I don't think that the Israeli bomb program really is a spur to, for example, the Iranian program. I think the Iranian program began when the Iranians were afraid of Saddam. So I think the inter-Islamic rivalries in the Middle East are just as important and perhaps more important than the rivalry between Israel and the Muslim world.
How can progress be made, though, in reducing nuclear arms when there's such an imbalance among nations in the Middle East?
Well, if you look at Israel's nuclear program, I think you have to ask, what good is it? It certainly isn't useful in the present struggle with the Palestinians. And the Palestinians have come up with a threat to Israel, which is very serious, and which is demoralizing Israel and driving people to leave. And the Israeli arsenal, the nuclear arsenal, is absolutely of no use against that. So if you're thinking about imbalances, I think that probably the Israeli nuclear arsenal was invented at a time when the Soviets were backing some of Israel's rivals. And Israel really feared that there might be a nuclear standoff with the Soviet Union. And so I think you have to look at the history of it. Today, I question whether the nuclear arsenal in Israel is even worth its upkeep.
What evidence has the Wisconsin Project dug up on Iran's being a potential trader in nuclear arms or nuclear materials to be used to create weapons?
Well, it's well known that Iran has longstanding and close connections to terrorist groups. Ironically, it has much better connections than Iraq did under Saddam Hussein. If Iran does get the bomb, we really have to worry about whether Iran at some point would decide it wants to use one of those connections. But it's maybe unfair to single out Iran in this regard. The North Koreans have pretty much announced, and it's probably a bluff, but you never know, they've announced that they may actually sell nuclear weapon material in the world market. And the Pakistani program, we have thought in the past, was fairly safe, but we've just learned that the Pakistanis did supply North Korea with centrifuge technology. And so we're looking at more and more places that could be sources for nuclear weapon material getting into the hands of terrorists. And that worries me greatly.
What is known of Pakistan's nuclear cache and capability?
Pakistan has a successful nuclear design. It's small. It's efficient. It uses high-enriched uranium, which the Pakistanis are making now on their own, having imported the means to do so from various countries. The big concern about Pakistan is whether the Pakistanis are now going to export what they know. And it looks as if the answer to that is yes. The Pakistanis have helped the North Koreans set up a separate means of making nuclear weapon material. That is, they can now enrich uranium and make uranium fuel bombs, whereas before they were only making plutonium fuel bombs. And I think the suspicion that the Pakistanis may have helped the North Koreans with warhead design. The Pakistanis are certainly in the position to do that. There are also rumors to the effect that the Pakistanis have helped the Iranians. So what you're looking at is a case where we have a country, Pakistan, which is not very stable, which is exporting its nuclear know-how, and which is telling us, with some justice, that we can't come down too hard on them because we need them in the war on terrorism. So this is tough. It's just difficult. I frankly didn't expect the Pakistanis to become an export problem. I always expected that the Pakistanis would simply be content to build a nuclear deterrent to India and stop there. But unfortunately, I was wrong about that.
Well, this is so complex. What is the model for containment?
Somehow, it's necessary to convince countries that it's in their interest not to do this. We, meaning the United States and countries that are worried about proliferation, haven't been entirely successful in convincing countries of this. There have been some success stories. When the Soviet Union broke up, Kazakhstan, Belarus, and Ukraine all had inherited nuclear weapon potential from the Soviet Union. And the question was whether they were going to keep that or whether they were going to send it back to Moscow. And in every case, they decided to send it back to Moscow. And they made the calculation that it was in their interest to do that. They all needed better relations with the West. They all wanted to come in the direction of the United States. When our diplomats went to talk to them about something, the last thing they wanted was for the first item on the agenda to be their nuclear weapon program. So they got rid of the bomb. What we have to do is convince more countries in the world that is the way they should go. But so far, it's been hard to do. That doesn't mean it can't be done. But it just means that we have to increase both the incentive to get rid of the program and also increase the threat that if they don't, they're going to suffer. We have to make it a high foreign policy priority. It has to be more important than just about anything else. And we just haven't been willing to do that.
I'm talking with Gary Milholland. He's director of the Wisconsin Project, a nonprofit foundation which carries out research and public education designed to combat the spread of nuclear weapons. We're going to take a break now, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Gary Milholland. He directs the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control, which has been tracking nuclear and missile-related technology since 1986. There's a recent report that the CIA presented to Congress that it believes North Korea has mastered the technology of turning nuclear fuel into weapons and that they don't have to prove the effectiveness of their program by a nuclear test. What's your opinion of this new report, and does it dispel all doubt that North Korea is a bona fide nuclear power?
I think one of the most frightening things about North Korea is how little we know about what it actually has. The CIA has been saying for a decade that they assess that North Korea has enough nuclear material, in this case plutonium, to make one or two nuclear warheads. The CIA has been saying that for a decade. And we know that, based on public reports and observations, that the North Koreans for years have been conducting explosive tests to determine whether their nuclear weapon design would work. What you do is you take the components of the design and you test them without having a nuclear fuel in the middle. You test it with a dummy core to see if and you see whether and in this case an implosion reaction would be sufficient to detonate a bomb. You can do that. We did that. Everybody does that, and the North Koreans have been doing it. So what we have now is the CIA saying, it's scratching its head and saying, well, we think the North Koreans have enough plutonium for a couple of bombs, and we think that because we've seen them doing all of these explosive tests for probably a decade, that by now they probably have figured it out. And if they put the plutonium they have into a bomb and set it off, it would probably work. That's what the CIA is telling us. From where I sit, that's very alarming. Because this country is probably the most dangerous one in the world right now, and the CIA, in effect, doesn't know how much plutonium it has and doesn't know whether it actually has a workable nuclear weapon. I think we can't really conduct foreign policy this way. We can't be flying blind in such an important area. Somehow, our intelligence has to be better. We also went to war in Iraq, apparently, on the strength of reports that Iraq presently was, at that time, a mass destruction weapon threat. Turns out that that was probably wrong. I just don't see how we're going to succeed in stopping the spread of nuclear weapons or other kinds of weapons of mass destruction unless our intelligence gets better. So I think this recent CIA report should be seen as something that reflects more on the CIA than it does on North Korea.
Well, your organization has been tracking the North Korean nuclear arms program. Do you have conflicting intelligence?
Well, here's what we've done. The United States has watched North Korea operate this little reactor. And we've also watched them shut it down. We've watched them take the spent fuel rods from that reactor and run them through a plant that extracts plutonium. But if you want to know how much plutonium came out of the plant, you have to know how long the reactor ran, you have to know at what power it ran, you have to know how many fuel rods were taken out, and you have to know what the efficiency was of the process for extracting the plutonium from them. All of this is just an estimate. The estimate that North Korea may have enough plutonium for one or two bombs, it could be off by, I would guess, by quite a bit. It could be off by as much as 100%. North Korea could have perhaps twice as many bombs. And that was before this summer when the North Koreans announced that they had taken other fuel rods that they've taken out of the reactor since, and that they've also run those through the plutonium plant and extracted the plutonium from those fuel rods, which would give them 5 additional bombs. So right now we're looking at a situation where North Korea may have enough plutonium for 7 bombs or 10 bombs or 3 bombs. We don't know. But if it's 7 to 10 bombs, then that means that North Korea has enough to sell.
Now, in recent months, the Bush administration has changed its position somewhat on dealing with the growing North Korean arsenal or the perception of their nuclear arsenal. And instead of refusing to sign a non-aggression pact, the administration has offered something called a security assurance. What does this mean, and where does the U.S. stand with its diplomatic efforts to curb North Korea's nuclear production?
It's hard to understand U.S. policy toward North Korea right now. The only, it seems to me, successful policy is going to be one in which the United States, in effect, buys the North Korean nuclear program. That's the cheapest, cleanest, certainly the least hazardous way of doing this. We just have to go in and make a deal with them which results in their dismantling their program, letting us get it out of the country, and letting us verify that it's gone and it's not being rebuilt. If we can do that, and if we can, in effect, rescue their country in exchange, I think that's going to be a good deal for us. And it doesn't make much sense just to sort of piously declare that we don't deal with blackmailers. I mean, so that has to be the solution. What I'm seeing, though, is that because of the obsession with Iraq by the officials who were in charge of our national security policy, there has not been a coherent U.S. Plan for getting to that situation in North Korea. We have done, I think, a decent job of rallying support among other countries in the region, and particularly the Chinese, for doing something. But we're very slow. It's not clear what our real policy is. We seem to only be reacting to what the North Koreans do. This is such an important question that I think we should have a clear, coherent policy that is supported by Congress and the American people in dealing with this. And frankly, right now, I don't see it. I don't see what our policy is.
Well, one more question. Do you see progress happening in the international community on non-proliferation, or are we in a standoff now?
We're basically in a standoff. I think that Iran is a do-or-die situation. If the Iranians can belong to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, accept IAEA inspections, and still make the bomb, then it shows that the international system for stopping the spread of nuclear weapons is not making it, and that U.S. diplomacy is not adequate, and that the Bush doctrine of prevention is just pretty much rhetoric. Because if the Iranians do get the bomb, that means that other countries in the Middle East are going to have to think about it seriously. Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and any effort we may have to spread democracy through the Middle East is going to be much harder if countries to which we're spreading this democracy have nuclear weapons. So I think if we can't hold the line with respect to Iran, then we're looking at a nuclear weaponized world, in which we're all going to be much more at risk.
What's an alternative doctrine to prevention?
Well, I think the prevention doctrine might be a good one if it were seriously held. The problem with prevention doctrine is that it's only been applied in a case where we didn't really need it, that is, in Iraq. And it's not being applied in cases where we do need it, and that is Iran and North Korea. So if you have this doctrine of nuclear prevention and you only use it where it's not really important, then what kind of a doctrine is it really? I don't think we really do have this kind of a doctrine that we're willing to enforce unless the United States is willing and able to cut off the Iranian program. And I think that's really the test. And we're gonna know the answer to that within the year.
Gary Milholland, thank you for talking with me on Fresh Air.
You're welcome.
Gary Milholland directs the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.